Welcome to the Butte Report. It is Thursday, January 21st, 2021. The Butte Report is a weekly program reporting on and analyzing issues that affect our lives and our livelihood by focusing on local government, including the Board of Supervisors, the various municipalities, and even school boards and water districts within Butte County. I'm your host, Sue Hildebrand. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by SwissLink, your online source for recycled and surplus military items. SwissLink also has camping, hiking, and outdoor gear, including clothing, survival supplies, and just cool stuff. For over 25 years, SwissLink.com has been delivering outdoor gear to your door. Visit SwissLink.com and start planning your great adventure. Tonight on the Butte Report, we'll cover the Oroville and Gridley City Councils and the Paradise Irrigation District. We'll also follow up on the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency's activities from last week. Interviews include Gridley City Council member Angel Calderon and Evan Tuschinski, chair of the Vina GSA. On Tuesday, in a 4-1 vote, the Oroville City Council approved an amendment to rezone the village at Ruddy Creek subdivision before that area is annexed by the city. The annexation process began late last year, and this decision will allow the 24-acre located at 18th Street and Feather Avenue in Thermalito to be developed as 97 single-family residential lots rather than the previously proposed high-density lower-income housing, including apartments and condos. The rationale for approving this change, as articulated by Mayor Chuck Reynolds, was that Oroville lacked housing for people with higher incomes. Councilmember Janet Goodson, the only dissenting vote, stressed that providing housing for all citizens, not just higher-income earners, is important. The city of Oroville has a housing and homeless crisis similar to the city of Chico. Councilmember Art Hatley and Vice Mayor Scott Thompson recused themselves from the discussion due to their homes in near proximity to the development. To hear a full description of the issue around the Ruddy Creek development and an interview with former Councilmember Linda Draper on this topic, see the December 17, 2020 edition of the Butte Report. Continuing at the Oroville meeting, the council held a public hearing regarding the zoning code amendment and proposed revision of Oroville Municipal Code regarding the city's sign ordinance. Finally, the council voted unanimously to approve a $200,000 budget for the scanning and archiving of old City Hall documents through Left Coast Scanning in Chico. The next Oroville City Council meeting will be held on February 2nd at 4 p.m., and it can be viewed on the city's website and on YouTube. Turning to the Gridley City Council meeting, also held on Tuesday, committee assignments were made for the three new council members. Councilmember Catalina Sanchez was assigned to the Northern California Power Association, and she questioned why the former city administrator, who resigned amid scandal, was still representing the city on that commission. The Northern California Power Association is a California joint action agency, and it was established in 1968 by a consortium of locally owned electric utilities to make joint investments in energy resources. Gridley Electric Utility, a member of the NCPA, has been operating in Gridley since 1910, and it oversees the delivery of wholesale power, maintains and operates the local electric distribution system, and is involved in engineering and advanced planning for improvements, replacement, and expansion of distribution system. The Gridley Electric Utility also maintains and operates the city's street lighting system. Mayor Bruce Johnson explained that the former administrator is still under contract to the city at 20 hours per week to continue to represent Gridley on the Northern California Power Association. He will stay on the commission until the new city administrator is hired. He will then meet with the new city administrator and Councilmember Sanchez to bring them up to speed, and his contract will then be terminated. Mayor Johnson then discussed an email sent by a member of the public questioning why the mayor sits on 9 committees when newly installed Councilmember Angel Calderon only received 2 committee assignments. As a result, Calderon was offered committee assignments of his choice. I spoke with Councilmember Calderon to discuss his committee assignments, but started by asking him how he is settling in to being a council member.
Well, it's kind of a learning experience for me. I'm taking it easy. I've never been an elected official before. So I want to get to know the procedures, other council members, and just take it from there. I got ideas that I want to put forward, and I want to test the ground first, so to say that.
And what do you see as the most important issues that are facing the city of Gridley today?
Well, right now, without any question, is the mortality rate in Gridley due to COVID-19. I've just lost too many friends and neighbors over this pandemic. Sadly enough, I haven't been able to really get any numbers, official numbers for Gridley, which is one of the reasons, you know, to actually have a committee addressing the pandemic in Gridley. This is an issue that has really disturbed me personally as an individual, as someone who also has underlying medical issues. So, and seeing neighbors die really, really affected me. So this is, to me, number one at this moment.
Councilmember Angel Calderon, this week, committee assignments were made, and one of the committee assignments that you received was on the Orchard Hospital down in Gridley. Talk about why you specifically wanted this committee assignment.
Well, I've been living in Gridley for the past 25 years, going on 26, and I'm very familiar with Orchard Hospital and their services. I'm acquainted with a couple of the board of directors and the procedures. This is an institution in Gridley that is very effective when addressing the needs, the health needs of the population here. And it would be an excellent resource for the COVID-19 task force that I'm trying to implement in Gridley.
And you mentioned that one of the biggest issues facing Gridley right now is the pandemic. And at the meeting the other night, you requested that there is an ad hoc committee that very specifically addresses the pandemic. I know that Gridley is being hit pretty hard by COVID-19, with the Latino population being particularly hit hard. Talk about why you think that there's need for a special committee to address COVID and what you think that committee would look like and what it would do.
Well, I feel that COVID-19 is so tragic for us. And I saw that the city of Gridley did not have a specific policy in addressing the pandemic. Now, one of the issues about this pandemic is that it affects people with underlying health issues like diabetes and high blood pressure, which a lot of the Mexican people suffer from due to a lot of different circumstances, like their diet and hereditary issues. So this is very important. So I like to address all of that, not only with the people in Gridley, but anybody who wants to be, who can touch and reach out on the community, specifically migrant seasonal farm workers. I think this population has not stopped working since the pandemic started, and they are mostly high at risk. These people never tested themselves for COVID-19 because they were afraid that if they were positive, they would have to stop working, and they just can't afford to do that because there's no benefits to the work they do. They don't have sick leave. They don't have vacation time. So if they don't work, they don't eat. So they made a specific decision not to test themselves for fear of not being able to work. So this is an issue that only affects the Mexican population because we don't largely the migrant seasonal farm workers. And not only the community at large. So I would like to address that. I like to bring educational resources to all the community so they can, at least feel safe, get the feeling that they can, the city is interested in their health and their continued collaboration to improvement of our community. That's one of the reasons I think is very important to me.
And you have a unique set of skills and experiences, and you come from farm workers. Your family were farm workers, is that right?
That's correct. My father was a farm worker all his life. My mother and I, my first job ever was in the fields of around Hamilton City. That's where I come from. So definitely, I've been a farm worker. The last time I worked in the fields due to financial needs was in 1991. It hasn't been that long. So after being a professional, being unemployed for a while, I had to go back to the fields and to pay child support and you know, earn a living. So this is part of my life. This is part of my culture in Northern California. So definitely it hits home.
Councilmember Angel Calderon, you also, your regular job is working in the Butte County Behavioral Health Department. And so you seem to be in the perfect and unique position to be addressing the pandemic in Gridley with farm workers. And now you're on the Orchard Hospital Committee. And it seems like you can actually tap into all of the pieces and parts that need to be coordinated. So moving forward, how do you see Gridley actually addressing the pandemic locally?
Well, I think our needs haven't been addressed adequately. I think that we really need to bring public health to the table in Gridley so that we can collaborate to actually disperse all this information and all these tools necessary for our population or residents to take advantage of. And this is important because we have a very high mortality rate. I have a young man that I know, a neighbor of mine, that lost his grandmother in July and his grandfather in December. So he had a pretty bleak year in Christmas. And this is not the only people. 2 weeks ago, a former client of mine passed away, and the whole family is infected. So these are issues that I find on a regular basis, whether they're Hispanic or not, whether they're Mexican or not. It affects every segment, every sector of our city. I also wear a hat that I was appointed to the National Advisory Council on Migrant Health, which at the last time we had a reunion, we actually talked about COVID-19 and how the seasonal farm workers are dealing with it. Some of the obstacles they find in securing services for them. So now with Mr. Becerra coming into the Secretary of Health and Human Services, I think there's going to be an opportunity to really focus on the farm worker and some of the challenges, health challenges that they find on a regular basis. I'm very optimistic about the new administration and how they can really help the people at the lower scale of our society. So yes, I'm really working on this, trying to do the best that I can through my job. And also now through the city council, I want to establish an infrastructure for services to benefit our residents.
That was Gridley City Council member Angel Calderon. The next Gridley City Council meeting is scheduled for February 1st, and at this time, the meetings are not broadcast remotely. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Chico. Last night at the meeting of the Paradise Irrigation District Board of Directors, the board voted to co-sponsor Assembly Bill 36. This bill is being promoted by Assemblyman James Gallagher and would, quote, authorize the Paradise Irrigation District to use the design-build contracting process to award a contract for a water conveyance pipeline from the town of Paradise to the city of Chico. This bill would also authorize the town of Paradise to use the design-build contracting process to provide for the provision of sewer treatment to the town of Paradise, including the infrastructure connecting Paradise to the existing treatment facility in Chico. The implication of Gallagher's bill, AB 36, is that preparations are being made to potentially build a pipeline from Paradise to Chico to deliver Paradise Irrigation District water to the valley. In an interview on December 24th on the Butte Report, Paradise Irrigation District General Manager Tom Lando stated that PID is financially solid and there is no need to find customers for the district's water. Following up from last week's meeting of the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency monthly meeting via Zoom, the Vina GSA is just one of many local agencies across Butte County and the state of California, formed in part of the 2014 legislative package known as the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. This act, also called SGMA for short, created for the first time in California history a framework to sustainably manage the state's groundwater. In other words, to avoid overdrafting or draining the underground aquifers. SGMA directs local agencies, the GSAs, to work together to create a regional plan to balance the amount of water pumped out and the water put back into the shared basin. The goal of these plans, known as the Groundwater Sustainability Plans, is long-term sustainability of the basins. The Vina GSA, covering approximately 200,000 acres, is one of two GSAs that oversees the Vina Subbasin. The Vina Subbasin is a portion of the larger Sacramento Valley groundwater basin. The Vina Subbasin is located entirely in Butte County and is generally bounded by Tehama County to the north, the Alluvial Basin to the east, the border of the Western Canal Water District, and the Sacramento River to the west. The other GSA that shares responsibility to create a plan for the Vina Subbasin is the Rock Creek Reclamation District GSA. In one of their first agenda items last week, the Vina GSA chose its chair and vice chair, Evan Tuschinski and Jeff Royer, respectively. I recently spoke with Evan Tuschinski about the agency's progress in creating the groundwater sustainability plan. Because the definition of sustainability here is defined by the undesirable results that want to be avoided, I started by asking Tuschinski to talk about the variables or the measures that will be included in the groundwater sustainability plan to define undesirable results.
Well, first we are looking at the conditions of the basin. We did a basin setting study and sessions with our stakeholder advisory committee. That establishes where we are. So what are the current conditions? Moving forward in our process, we're going to be looking at the sustainable management criteria. And those are six areas that we want to make sure that we don't degrade. So in other words, we want to make sure that we don't lower our groundwater levels. We don't have reduction in storage. Seawater intrusion is one that's included by the state. That's not one of our issues. Degraded quality is an issue, and we will be looking at salinity as our degraded quality measure. We don't want land subsidence, so we don't want to have what's happened in places in the Central Valley where our land level goes down. And we don't want to have depletion of surface water, because there is a connection between surface water and groundwater. So those are the measures that we are going to look at. We're going to set what are those exact numbers, those exact levels that we need to look at here locally. SGMA basically empowered local jurisdictions to set these measures instead of having these measures be a one-size-fit-all from Sacramento blanket policy. And so our Vina GSA, in coordination but not necessarily in exact lockstep with Rock Creek Reclamation District, is going to set these standards for our part of the subbasin. And we're going to be required to follow the basic parameters of SGMA. We are going to be required to make sure that we are not completely out of line with our neighbors. But basically, we can govern for ourselves what we are going to do to make sure that our part of the subbasin and that our aquifer remains sustainable. Sustainable for people's use, sustainable for the environment's use. It's an all-encompassing definition of sustainability that's not necessarily what people may think of when they think of sustainable as a buzzword, but it encompasses that term and so many other elements.
You mentioned that you are identifying the floor of the measures. You know, you're not going to go any lower than this level, for example. But the Vina GSA is not coordinating directly with, for example, the Rock Creek GSA. How do the two of those GSAs work together if you're creating plans separately?
Well, Rock Creek actually did sign a memorandum of understanding with us. So our staff and their staff and our governing board and their governing board are working actually directly together, but they do have autonomy. So they don't have to follow exactly what we are doing. But we are trying to coordinate with them directly. We are hoping that our plans aren't in conflict with each other, but they don't have an obligation to do exactly what we're doing, even though we are in the sub-basin together. Again, we should be in lockstep because we are in the same sub-basin, but again, we are not legally obligated to do so. And the state could very well reject one or both of the plans if we aren't, and so it behooves us to coordinate and work together. So there is that element of it. There is coordination also between the other sub-basins, not even just the ones that are in Butte County, but the other ones that are in the northern Sacramento Valley, through interbasin coordination plans, again, to make sure that we aren't doing things at cross purposes. Again, not necessarily legally obligated, but it makes sense to do it from a pragmatic standpoint and from a hydrological standpoint. So again, the state could put a hammer down if plans are radically different from each other. So it makes sense for us to do these things in coordination with each other. But again, it's a little dodgy on how much legality there is in terms of following each other. Again, within one sub-basin, we should follow each other. But again, just because we as the VINA GSA may encompass a larger area than Rock Creek Reclamation District, that doesn't give us greater authority over Rock Creek Reclamation District. Within their area, they have their authority. We simply have signed a memorandum of understanding because we know that it behooves us to work well with them.
So the ultimate goal of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act is to have these locally created plans to ensure that the groundwater is sustainable. And what the VINA GSA is planning to do over the next 6 months is to produce the first draft of the plan that will help to manage the VINA subbasin. So at the end of this 6 months, in June, what do you hope to produce?
I hope that we will have, and we should because we've been on schedule, a plan that has these measures and actions that we propose to meet these goals so that over the next period of time, we're supposed to be out through 2042, but we can chart out even further based on modeling, that we have actions that would enable us to meet the goals that we've set out. And all of these things are locally driven, but they aren't locally government driven per se. I happen to be a stakeholder member of this board. The vice chair, Jeff Royer, is an agricultural stakeholder. So the two of us have two of the five votes on this, and it requires a supermajority to pass. The Stakeholder Advisory Committee has been conducting most of the heavy lifting so far on this. And again, those are all members of the community from various constituencies, environmental, agriculture, domestic well, business, etc. So there's already been a lot of public input, and then there's going to be more public input as this process goes along. Our next meeting on February 10th at 5:30, we're going to be having a workshop with the board and members of the public to weigh in. So the idea of SGMA is to have this be a very public, very transparent process. So at the end, whatever actions are taken, whatever mitigation measures may be needed, will have been vetted thoroughly by the area, by the community, by the people who live here and work here, so that these aren't going to be top-down impositions. These are going to be collaborative visions for what we are going to accomplish here.
Evan Tuschinski, chair of the VINA GSA, you mentioned the next meeting is on February 10th at 5:30, and it'll be on Zoom, and there'll be a workshop that will move this process, you know, 1 month further to your first draft of that section of the groundwater sustainability plan. What's going to be discussed at that workshop?
That's where we're going to really have the rubber meet the road with the sustainable management criteria. That's where we're going to really discuss, for lowering groundwater levels, where should those measures be? What's the minimum? Where should we raise the alarm bells when wells drop. For reduction of storage, the same thing. Those are kind of related to each other. But when we see our aquifer drop below a certain point, where should we start kicking in measures? Again, degraded quality is one of our issues. When salinity levels reach a certain point, when should alarm bells rise? Land subsidence, how far down should be considered acceptable for land to drop? What is considered in our area a natural level for land to drop, and what could be attributed to lowering of the aquifer or aquifer collapse? For surface water depletion, with rivers and streams dropping, what level of those, how many inches or how many feet in a year or over a period of years could be considered normal versus considered lowering of the aquifer level? Those are things, those are specific things, those are specific numbers and measures that we need to determine as a group and as a community, and that's what we're going to determine at the next meeting. At our previous meeting, we had what they called straw man numbers, where they just kind of threw out some spitball numbers that they came up with, but we need to determine as a community what are going to be the actual numbers, what are going to be the actual measures, and that's what's going to be workshopped next month. So that's really where, again, rubber meets the road. We are going to really have some practical discussions on a community-wide level.
Evan Tushinsky, this sounds like, this upcoming meeting sounds very important in terms of protecting and ensuring we have sustainable levels and high quality groundwater for Chico, for Butte County, and for really region-wide. How can people engage in this meeting, and how can people submit public comment?
Most importantly, they should sign up to be part of the water mailing list from Butte County. The email address is bcwater@buttecounty.net. That way they're going to be alerted to all of the different steps along the way, including when the meeting is, how to submit comments, all the other different agencies within Butte County, the neighboring GSAs, the Water Commission, etc. That's kind of a one-stop shop for information. We have our own vinagsa.org website that certainly is helpful specifically for us, but I'd recommend the bcwater@buttecounty.net email just to get hooked into all of the things that are going on with water in our county.
That was Evan Tushinsky, chair of the Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency. You're listening to the Butte Report on KZFR Radio. The Chico City Council canceled its meeting this week, limiting its agendas to items considered essential business. However, the Chico Police and Public Works Department continue to evict unsheltered people from Bidwell Park, even though there are no other options for where people can go. The True North Housing Alliance is working with the state program Project Room Key to temporarily house people until they can be moved into the shelter. Safe Space Winter Shelter is also working with the city to provide temporary shelter, but the need is still much greater than available spaces. Looking forward to next week, the Butte County Board of Supervisors will meet on Tuesday, January 26th, starting at 9 a.m., and it can be viewed online. On the Chico News and Review on the radio with Jason Cassidy at 5:30, Jason will feature the inauguration poem by Amanda Gorman. He will continue with potential newsmakers for 2021 and will cover Chico performances, Chico voices. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Members First Credit Union, created by the community for the community. Members First is a member-owned, not-for-profit financial institution providing checking, savings, loans, and credit cards to residents of Butte, Glen, Shasta, and Tehama counties. For more information, visit m1cu.org. Music by bensounds.com. Remember that the most important aspect of democracy is an informed citizenry. Tune in again next week and stay informed about what your government is doing.
It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey, Butte County, Jason Cassidy here.